Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Denny Griffin here, and welcome to my special show tonight. We're going to be discussing the Kaylee Anthony case. And for anyone not totally familiar with that case, Kaylee Anthony was the 2-year-old Florida girl from Orlando who went missing, reported missing on July 15th by her grandparents. And it turns out that she had actually last been seen on or about June 16th. And for over 30 days, her mother, Casey Anthony, had not reported her child as being missing. And tonight I have a special guest, Diane Fanning. And Diane is the author of 8 true crime books. Her book, Written in Blood, was nominated for the Edgar Allan Poe Award. But the most fulfilling thing for her as a true crime writer was the role she played in finding justice for wrongfully convicted Julie Rhea Harper. It was a story that was featured on the TV program 2020. Diane is also very gratified with the email she's received from the staff at domestic violence shelters around the country who've called her book Gone Forever an important book for women. As a writer, Diane has served on the executive committee of the Writers League of Texas and the Heart of Texas chapter of Sisters in Crime. She's also a member of Mystery Writers of America. And for our purposes tonight, she is currently under contract with her publisher to write the story of Kaylee Anthony. And I believe Diane is on the phone now. And we're having trouble hooking up with her here.
Can you hear me at all?
I got you now. Hi, Diane.
Oh, good.
Welcome.
Good. Hi. Glad to be here with you, Denny.
Well, I've been very excited about this because I got to tell you, I've been hooked on the Kaylee Anthony case since I first heard about it back in July. And it's actually, you know, a mystery, and it's been very intriguing for me. And I know there are many, many people in the country and probably out of the country who are in the same boat as I am. And, you know, just very interested in the details. And this thing, in fact, you had a blog posting today on the Women in Crime,
Women in Crime Inc. Yeah.
.blogspot.com site. And you got into several things, and one of them was about how bizarre this case is, and there's a twist and turn almost every day. So I've been really looking forward to having a chance to talk with you and getting some insights. What I'd like to do first, though, I know that some of your readers or who read your blog, and I know some people who read my blog, are very concerned that the Anthony family might profit from this tragedy. And I just want to make sure I'm correct in saying that you are under contract to write the story, the Kaylee Anthony story, but you are not working for or in conjunction with the Anthonys. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
I am just working as a writer, and my publisher, St. Martin's Press, and just like any other true crime book, I am looking for the information I can get from all sorts of different sources. And the bottom line, Denny, is when you're writing something like this that is real life, you can buy a story, but the truth is never for sale. So it would be counterproductive for me to even start going around offering money to anyone involved in the case.
And the title of the book is Mommy's Little Girl, or Will Be?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay.
At least that's what the publisher tells me.
Okay. I've made myself several notes of things I would like to cover today, and a little bit later on I'll invite callers to call in with questions. But I wanted to make sure we got certain things on the table prior to that. And I've broken them into categories. I want to talk about the book project itself. I also want to talk about the Anthony family, the incident of what actually we think happened to Kaylee and the investigation and so forth. From there on, do you have any particular order you would like to go in?
It's fine with me. Wherever you want to start, I'm ready to go.
Okay. Let's address the book project first, because that might help us with some other questions down the road. Now, in order to complete your research, can you tell me the people you want to interview in conjunction with this? And you already indicated about paying for interviews, so I'll dispense with asking you that. You've already answered it. But can you give me some of the people that you either have or would want to talk to before you're through?
I would like to talk to Yuri Melich.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to talk to the Anthony family, every member possible. I would also like to speak with people that are prosecuting the case, if possible. Sometimes district attorneys are a little shy about that, but if I can, I would like to. I would like to speak to people that have known Casey before this happened. I would like to talk to people who had interaction with Casey, with Kaylee while she was a little girl, to get a full sense of Kaylee. And that is always very important to me, because the reason I do this is for the victim. I want everyone to realize how big the tragedy is. And it might seem like overkill with this case, because I think it's generated a real well of empathy and sympathy and fondness for that little girl all across the country. But by the same token, it's important that we understand that we all lose something every time a life is lost to an act of violence, and that she needs to be put in the forefront and be the reason, despite all the distractions there are in this story.
Have you reached out to any of these people? I'm just wondering how receptive these various people are, if you've tried to contact any of them yet, or if you run into any problems, or you aren't in touch with them.
I've had a little contact on the governmental side. I haven't on the individual side yet. I was waiting to see when the trial would be, if it would be early on, and it looks like, you know, it was going to be in January, then it was moved to March. Now it doesn't look like March. So it's time for me to start calling people up and fixing a trip for Orlando to as many people as possible I'd like to talk to face-to-face. So I'll be going to Florida and setting up some stuff ahead of time.
And I assume for the Anthony family, you have to work through their attorneys. Is that how you would set this thing up?
Well, honestly, I would try to get to them without the attorneys first. That
right.
would be my first step. Mm-hmm. If I have to go through attorneys, I imagine that probably means I will not be able to talk to them, but I'm going to try anyway, whatever I need to do. I think there's a lot of information that family members could provide without really even touching on the case. A lot of the deep background on the family history and things like that. So, but this case has been so weird for me, Denny, because I'm not going about it in my typical fashion. And the reason for that is there's so much information that is being put out by the prosecutors. So many documents are being released by them and the Orange County Sheriff's Department that normally I'd have to go into town and beg and plead for, and hoping somebody would let me just look at them even if I couldn't have them. And that does happen a lot. I do get access to documents that haven't been released a lot of times. But in this case, they're releasing so much, keeping up with it. One thing I've never had to do with a book before is sit down and make a spreadsheet of all the documents that I've official documents that I've gotten, because normally I get them in such dribs and drabs that I can keep track of them in my head. But this case has been very, very different, and I usually go for the documents towards the end of my work rather than the beginning. But they were all right there.
So that's now is that due to the Florida so-called Sunshine Law making everything available?
Yeah, but I'll tell you right now, they have been far more free with the information than what I encountered when I wrote the Lisa Nowak book.
So this
when I wrote about the astronaut, I got some stuff, but it was kind of difficult at times, and they were not releasing the amount of material that was released in this case.
So from a researcher's standpoint, this case is much easier to get information out there. Good.
Yes.
Now, if we could, can you tell us, are you under any type of a deadline on this, or does your publisher want something done? Okay. Will they allow you to go until a verdict is reached, or do you have to do something prior?
I am on a deadline. Verdict or no verdict, it's got to be in the 1st of May.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Okay, so you're going to really have your hands full here, I guess. I mean, to cover all these bases in that time frame. Okay.
Well, I've already begun a lot of writing on it, and it'll get done, but it will be one of those things where I'll forget what my husband looks like for a little while.
Let's now, you obviously have done some research, even though the interviews are pending, but you've done, and I'm sure like all of us, followed, you know, the documents and the articles and the TV coverage and so on. Have you got your own theory on this case or no?
Well, to a certain degree, I do. There are a lot of details that I'm not firm on in my own mind. But at this point, I'm pretty certain of one thing. This child didn't die by accident.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing a lot of people entertain. But there's no reason for duct tape if it's accidental.
Right.
That just totally wipes that off the table. And if Casey had called the police immediately after she had tried to get hold of this alleged Zaneta person, then this would be a whole different ballgame about the questions about her innocence or guilt. But no mother, nowhere, no time is innocent when she does not report a child missing for a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no reasonable explanation for that. I've been.
No, and she wouldn't have done it then, except her mother made it happen.
Yeah, and speaking of the mother, of course, we got the current thing with George hospitalized in the psyche. I guess he's in a different hospital now, but for the past several days.
He went home today.
Oh, he went home. Oh,
I believe he went home. He was released today.
Oh, he was. Okay. Well,
yes.
We've got that situation. We've got Cindy and. And up until recently, how she conducted herself, we got, of course, Casey, and Lee's kind of a, you know, you hear different things about him. What do you think of the Anthony family, the four main players now, which would be George and Cindy, Casey herself, and the brother Lee? What do you think of those people?
Well, I think that there's been a lot of negative talk about Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just think some of that is just maybe Cindy's just not that likable, or at least under this kind of stress, she's not a likable person. And who knows if any of us would be likable in this situation. But I don't think that she had anything to do with what happened to her granddaughter because of her reaction to the car. And because of the fact that she called the police. Now, after the fact, did she do some things intentionally, or were they subconsciously motivated? You know, that's a big question. Like the thing with the hairbrush and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, she is not in an enviable position.
Right.
You know, your child is so important to you, and you do not want to believe that a child you carried in your body for 9 months could possibly do something like this. And you're going to look for every reason that this is not true, no matter how unreasonable, far-fetched, out in left field it is. So she's been torn in so many different directions, and I think sometimes she has acted in ways that have made her look bad, but I don't know that you can really blame her for much of it. Maybe in some cases.
Do you think then that in some respects she may have contributed to the animosity that's been directed toward her by her conduct or by her actions?
Yes, yes. And I think nobody can believe the level of denial she was in, you know, and they had a hard time with it. And I don't know, you know, I have not walked in that woman's shoes, so I hesitate to be too critical of her behavior. But I think even less culpable in any of this is George.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, he has just been sucker punched one time too many. I think, you know, there are rumors about improper things he did with his daughter or granddaughter, and I think it's crazy talk. He is so henpecked that I can't see him doing anything that would tick off Cindy with the child or the grandchild. It just doesn't seem even possible. And he's lost his job, and I think he did have a psychiatric breakdown. I do think he did think about suicide in that motel room. I think he went as far as he could go with his denial, and when he couldn't hold on to a shred of it anymore, he fell apart.
So you think then Cindy is the controller? I mean, George, is maybe intimidated or whatever by her.
Yeah, and I could be wrong, and when I do more research and get more into the personal side of everything, maybe I'll find out I was mistaken. But that is the impression I have at this point.
And well, how about the brother Lee? Where do you think he fits into the great scheme of things here?
Well, Lee acts secretive and furtive, and you just don't quite know about him. But you look at a few basic things that he has done, and like the night that the police were called, he was grilling his sister, trying to get answers out of her. Then when he came to jail a couple of times to visit her, again he was grilling her. In fact, in that August 16th conversation with her parents, she said she didn't want to see Lee because all it would be was a bunch of questions again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if Lee's annoying his sister with all his questions, then I don't think he was involved in anything either.
Yeah, how about now after the fact and possibly a cover-up and or a defense, trying to defend his sister, you think he...
Well, I think, you know, if you have loved someone all your life and then they commit some horrible act, your response is still likely to be a desire to protect. And he is a big brother. And so no matter about right and wrong, he's going to have an urge to protect his baby sister.
Right.
So it's hard to say whether some of this is intentional or unthinking.
And what about Casey herself? You know, she is not probably the most popular person in the country at this point. And after watching and listening to her and all these tapes that were released of her and police interviews and interrogations and so on, and the tapes of her talking to her parents when they visited her in jail and all that. And I've tried to make sense and think of some reasonable explanation for some of the tales she told the police to begin with. You know, the jobs that didn't exist, a nanny who apparently didn't exist, and these types of things. And then the information about her stealing money from her friends and from her grandparents and all this. And I'm having a real problem with finding anything favorable about this girl. What do you think?
I am open to additional input about Casey Anthony. But I'll tell you, although I'm not a forensic psychologist or a forensic psychiatrist, every read I make on that girl is she is a psychopath with a strong element of narcissism.
But nothing to the point that you would see as a defense, you know, an insanity type thing.
No. I, I'm not seeing it, and I have talked to some forensics professionals in psychology and psychiatry, and it's not obvious. I mean, if it's there, someone needs to show it to me, but I'm not seeing it. And then people say, well, you know, how could she be like this without some severe trauma in her childhood, like molestation or something like that? And, you know, some people are just psychopaths. They don't need anything to go wrong in their life. That's just the way they are.
And I don't know, maybe you've heard something different, but my understanding is that at this point, it's not clear, in fact, whether the defense is going to try some type of an insanity thing. Have you heard anything different on that?
No, and what I think is this. If the defense feels there's no way they're going to win this case, they're going to do one of two things. They're going to try to get a deal, or they're going to plead insanity.
Okay.
Because they have no other choices.
That's kind of what I've been thinking, and the people that read my blog and comment, that seems to be the vast majority think that's the two choices. It's going to come down to one or the other. And I'm not sure so far that I see a great defense here. I thought that the Orange County police and other agencies who assisted them have done a professional job. And if I'm correct, and the evidence, as I know, it looks to me to be a pretty powerful case. I don't know what your opinion is, but it looks like they're putting together a pretty strong prosecution case.
Yeah, I think there were tiny little things that could have been done differently. For example, the one thing that stands out in my mind is the fact that they didn't seal the car immediately.
Okay.
I think, you know, they did the next day, but I think they should have done that the same day the call came in, because those pants left the car, and those pants apparently smelled pretty vile, and Cindy washed them, and she said in her statement that when she was interviewed that she didn't wash them till about 2 weeks later. But if you look at incident reports from the time, she told the officer who came out to seal the car on the 16th of July that the pants that were in the car I washed because they smelled so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So they were washed immediately, pretty much. And I think they probably should have still been taken in regardless, but obviously they should have been taken in before anybody had an opportunity to wash them. But a lot of that's hindsight. I mean, cops are people too, and they can't see in the future and know automatically everything they'll need. So, you know, with a couple of exceptions like that, yes, I do think the officers have done an excellent job, and as well as could be expected. You know, it's hard when you're faced with a lot of lies to find the truth, and I think they did it in pretty quick time.
Did you find, and when the transcripts or the release of the police, the initial police interviews with Casey, when she led them to the studio claiming she had a job there and all this thing, and to
yes.
the Sawgrass Apartments where she supposedly had dropped Kaylee off with Zaneta, how much truth have you found in her story? Anything?
It's hard to say that there was any truth, except she knew the right street that the apartment was what she was lying about. I mean, you know, it's pretty, you know, it's like she figured if she told her lies long enough and hard enough that everybody was going to believe her. And, you know, you see her going through the day with the police officers, one thing after another thing, and she's taken him there. She's confronted with stuff that, you know, no, of course, Sinead didn't live there. That's an old folks' home. You know, and she just keeps going on as if she knows everybody will believe her if she keeps saying it over and over again. I mean, the fact that she actually not only took them to Universal, but was walking through down a hall to where her office was supposed to be and went all the way through the studio lot and halfway down the hall before she said, I give. I mean,
yeah, incredible.
You know, and that is psychopathic thinking, that you can fool people. If you just bluff long enough, they're going to fall for it.
Right.
And I think that Casey has that, particularly when she's dealing with men. She knows she can be cute, and she knows that if she bats her eyes right, a lot of times she can get men to do what she wants, believe what she wants, whatever. And she was playing woman psychopath games.
Okay, what I'm going to do, Diane, is I think we've got enough information on the table. Now, I'm going to go ahead and encourage anyone with a question or comment for you to call us, 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982 if you have a question or comment for Diane. And in the meantime, we'll continue on with my list of questions. And regarding the investigation charges and trial prep, what is your impression so far of the defense team as far as Baez and his associates and how they've conducted themselves or what they've done so far? Do you have any opinion on that?
Well, it's sort of like it's learn-as-we-go moment for Mr. Baez. There have been so many blunders that maybe are to be expected for someone that doesn't have a whole lot of experience in big cases. But he's done things that can be picked apart, like the hug of his client, the sneaking the bracelet in her socks, having a spokesman that's a convicted felon. It keeps going on and on. And then he says things that people can pick at. Like he says, I feel my client is innocent. Well,
mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of lawyers will come right out and say, my client is innocent of all charges. But I feel my client is innocent? I mean, what is he doing, having a spiritual session with a psychic? I feel it.
Yeah, I thought that was very weak.
I've known lawyers who have totally avoided that question, and you don't realize till 5 minutes after you talk to them that they avoided the question, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they do it so skillfully. He didn't answer straight out with the, I know she's innocent, she's innocent of all charges. He just kind of weaseled around it and didn't do a good job of it.
Now he's got, of course, adding specialist, Dr. Lee and this Dr. Kobolinski, and so that's always on Nancy Grace, and Mrs. Baden. And there's a lot of talk, people wondering, are all these people working pro bono, including the investigators and everybody involved? No, I know it's a chance for them to get notoriety, if that's what they're after, but do you think there's more to it than that? Because there's been speculation about movie deals, book deals, money changing hands. Have you heard anything or have any opinion about whether these people are all legitimately pro bono or if there's something else happening?
Well, you know, these are all real high-quality, experienced court witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to answer any questions. But in all likelihood, if they are doing it pro bono, they are doing it thinking, well, for example, you know, you take Henry Lee, he'll probably have another book and have a chapter in it about this. But, you know, in the immediate payback, I mean, he could be doing it pro bono. You just don't know that all of those experts do some pro bono work. But, you know, I just think Henry Lee is once again on the wrong side of this one. And who knows if he gets on the witness stand, what ridiculous stuff will come out of his mouth. He was on, you know, Written in Blood was about the Michael Peterson case, and he was a witness for the defense there, and he actually said there was too much blood for a beating.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, you tell me, is that possible ever?
I can only laugh. And how about some of the other ones? Not this Larry Kobolewski, I guess I'm pronouncing that right, and he's another expert. And now, it was pointed out to me the other day that he has not been on Nancy Grace as frequently as he was. He was almost a nightly guest for a while, and I don't know if that means anything, that he hasn't been on there as frequently. But
I don't know if it does either. It may be simply Nancy Grace's producer saying, since you're tied up with this case that we are covering, we don't want to have you on giving opinions about everything. Or he could have said, this is a conflict of interest for me to be talking about the case, except in my role. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why he wouldn't be, you know, that are perfectly legitimate. I don't know what to think of Kobolewski, though, to be honest. You tend to be a little suspect of someone who is constantly on TV, but then he's like with John Jay. I mean, and he's got a good reputation there. So I hesitate to say that there's anything wrong with him, and I personally don't know of anything wrong with these other experts. And I don't know why they'd be involved, but you have to remember, too, that experts sometimes get involved. And then when it comes down to it and they give their opinion to the defense attorney, all the defense attorney wants to do is keep them as far away from the courtroom as possible. I mean, there are people that come in to consult and they say, well, you know, the only thing I can see is your client did this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't testify.
And
so it's difficult to tell.
The evidence that I'm aware of with this, let's take a few items. For example, what do you think the value is or the strength of the so-called body farm, where they analyzed the air samples in the trunk of the car Casey had been using and determined human decomposition? Is that something that you think is powerful, or is it sort of unconfirmed science? Or
well, I on an anecdotal level, of the responses everybody had to that car, that almost seems more powerful to me than something that reeks of funny science. You know, it may be totally legitimate, but people, I don't think, and particularly, you know, a jury that's just regular folks is going to put much credence in smell.
Mm-hmm.
People are very suspicious over smells anyway.
Right.
You know, you hear them laughing about all the different smell studies that have been done.
Right.
So I don't know that, you know, if they're going to look at that and go, that's junk science, or if they're going to buy it. And some of it may very well depend on the quality of performance that's done by the person that testifies about that evidence.
Okay, we'll get back to these questions in a second. We got a caller here, and let me get him on the line or her on the line. Hopefully. Switchboard's acting a little weird tonight here. Oh, caller, if you can hear me, I'm trying to hook you up. It's a caller from the 702 area code. Well, I'll keep trying. In the meantime, let's go to another bit of evidence. What do you think about the Kronk, the meter reader who tried back in August several times to get the police to check out what he thought was a suspicious deal in that wooded area where Kaylee's remains was eventually found. Do you see problems with him and his background and so forth?
Well, you know, I think Mr. Kronk is a part citizen wanting to do a responsible job as a citizen, and I think there's a part of him that is hungering for his 15 minutes of fame. He wanted to be the hero. He wanted to be the guy that found the body and answered the questions. And, you know, you can't exactly fault him too much for that. I think he got caught up in his own glory there for a little while. I mean, it's like the whole story with the skull. You know, he doesn't mention it when he supposedly saw it, but suddenly he remembers it after the cameras are on. Now, our memories are very, very funny things, and we can really trick our memories until we believe we know what we saw when it might not have been exactly what we saw. So I think it's one of those situations where he didn't really see a skull. He just looked back and remembered seeing something and decided it must have been a skull. And I think it's just the games our minds play with us sometimes when it comes to memory and trying to recall things. But I do think, I really think he's kind of harmless. I don't know if he'll make a very good witness.
I think I have the caller finally hooked up here. Caller from 702, are you on with us?
Yes, I am, Dennis. Thank you.
Oh, hi. I think I know who this is. Jack, welcome to the show. And
yes, it is. I do have a question for Diane.
Yes, please go ahead.
Diane, I tuned in a little bit late, so I hope I'm not stepping on anybody's toes. You seem to have an awful lot of information on this, whether it's been granted through the police department or through your own investigation. Do you have an opinion as to motive in this child killing?
I think the motive was pretty simple. I think there's a strong piece of narcissist in Casey Anthony, and I think that it just wasn't good and convenient for Casey to have to deal with a child right now.
It wasn't something as simple then as the baby dirtying its diaper or pants.
I don't think so. I mean, what's the purpose of duct tape if it wasn't intentional murder?
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to
keep the baby quiet.
That's a little severe. I mean, it was wrapped all the way around her head. It wasn't like someone plastered a piece over her mouth. And, you look at her boyfriend at the time and made a comment, an idle comment, I am sure, of saying, when I have kids, I want to have boys. And
interesting.
Haley isn't a boy.
Right. Very good. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling,
Jack. You're welcome.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Both of you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, that to do a little follow-up on that question, it is, I know there are some people who think, and I think Leonard Padilla says this frequently and when he's on these different shows, that it was an accident. It was an unintentional thing that Casey was going to stop in a bar or something and Kaylee was going to cry or might say something. So she chloroformed her, and then not expecting anything more severe to happen, and it was an accidental overdose of chloroform or something. I don't personally buy into that, and I gather you don't either, that it was it had to be an intentional thing based on the
evidence. There was a point in time where I considered that as a possibility, and it was a viable possibility, but I think there's too much information that points away from that. And I think Leonard came to town and he initially was buying into Casey's version. He quickly came around to thinking that she wasn't telling everything. But I think he spent enough time with the family that he picked up on a trace of their denial. And that he takes it so far as to say it was an accident. But I think he's just a little too close, in a way, maybe, to see how unlikely that is.
And speaking of Leonard, what do you think was behind it when he first got involved? He came out of California to Florida, kind of jumped into this thing, putting up the bond, and the first bail bond. And there was a lot of speculation then and talk about, who is this guy, what's behind it, what's he hope to gain, or what's in it for him. Do you have any feelings or thoughts about why he involved himself in this to begin with?
Well, I think he did honestly think that there was some sort of miscarriage of justice going on, for one. And I think beyond that, I mean, he probably wanted to make a name for himself, and he saw an opportunity. And thinking he was doing it while also doing a good deed, to me, is justifiable. And so I just think that it was, just one of these things. He got caught up in it and realized not only would he be doing a good thing, but he could, you know, help himself at the same time, and he went for it.
And
I think he got emotionally involved. I mean, if you look at the way that he reacted to the Bike Boy Band,
mm-hmm.
he got emotionally involved with the family, and he was really... I think that probably impacts his viewpoint.
Okay. And do you think that Leonard, then, you don't necessarily think he was in this for the idea of getting a book or movie type thing out of it? You think he had a legitimate, to begin with anyway, of reason for getting involved, the right reason?
I give him the benefit of the doubt on that. You know, I basically think everybody deserves the benefit of the doubt until they prove that they don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I certainly think Leonard deserves it, too.
And I was wondering what you think about Baez or the defense team trying to get the records of Tim Miller's Equisearch. Do you foresee that happening, and what do you think they really need it, or what do you think's behind that?
When I look at it from a legal viewpoint, I guess I think that there is a legitimate reason, but I do think it is basically a fishing expedition, hoping they'll find something that they could possibly use for the defense. And I also think that if it is allowed, that it could have a very chilling effect on volunteerism. And Lord knows those families need volunteers to help search when someone is missing. I mean, there's so many people in this country that go missing. Some of them are, you know, everything from seniors who wander off because they have dementia of some sort to little children that get abducted. I mean, people need volunteers to look for missing children to get closure for families. But if they know information is going to be spread all over the place, are they going to come forward?
Yeah, that's certainly got to be a consideration, and however they decide this, you know, is the
yeah.
potential value versus the damage it could do. And I guess the judge is going to have to make that decision. But, it is a very good point that you don't want to discourage people from helping by going too far. And, you know, this is, the media obviously will be all over any information that's released. And what do you think of the media's performance so far, of the coverage of this? I know you have, for example, Nancy Grace does a nightly show almost 5 days a week about the Anthony case. Sometimes she sprinkles in another story or two for part of it, but it's primarily Kaylee. Greta Van Susteren used to, at one point, do almost continuous. She's gotten into other things now and only periodically. Geraldo Rivera has every so often. So what do you think of the report agenda on this case?
Well, you know, I mean, when you look at it in one way, it looks like, you know, overkill on the part of the media. But then when you really sit down and look at the specifics of this case, this is one of the most bizarre cases I have ever seen. How can you resist covering a story with all the characters that come out of the woodwork? I mean, everything from, I mean, a bounty hunter that flies in from California to come to her rescue, to Tim Miller, who's founded this wonderful organization, Texas Equisearch, and what's the background on him? He had a daughter that turned up missing. So, you know, there's so many twists in this story and different things that come up, so many interesting people and characters that you see out there, and then the bracelet hidden in the sock. I mean, have you ever heard of an attorney doing that? I mean, it's just, it's the craziest story ever. How can they resist it?
Yeah, you're right. There is a great cast of characters here. I mean, you know, to keep interest, because there's always new information, not necessarily about the crime itself, but about the characters involved, the players. It's really a fascinating, fascinating thing. So, yes, it's newsworthy. And the bizarre, now, children disappear every day. Children are murdered every day. But not under quite the circumstance with the failure to report by the mother, you know, failure to report her missing and all these kinds of things, I think, set this apart from
Other, you know, I can't think of another case of a month without reporting her missing. I mean, I'm sure there is one somewhere, but I sure can't think of it.
And, you know, when I heard the first explanation that Casey was conducting her own investigation, that's why she didn't report it, I couldn't help but think of O.J. Simpson after the acquittal that he was going to now seeking out the real killers of Ron and Nicole.
Well, yeah. Maybe she can hire, when they convict her, maybe she can hire O.J. to do that for her.
Right.
He doesn't have that much time to serve, I don't think, so he can go out and... Yeah.
Diane, I just realized we've been cut off here, the live stream. I don't know where the 45 minutes went to, but it disappeared. I really want to thank you for being with me tonight. I mean, it's really been fascinating, and I hope maybe we can do it again a little bit down the road with when your book's getting...
I would love to, Danny. I've got a new true crime book coming out this summer.
Okay.
Yes, I will.
Okay, Diane, and thanks again, and the best of luck to you with this project and meeting your deadline.
Thank you.
Okay, good night now. Bye-bye.
Good night.
And for those listening, thank you for being with us, and we'll talk to you next time. In the meantime, stay safe and healthy. Bye-bye.